Nah, let's just end the podcast.
News.
We can just do all the bumpers like live.
Live bumpers. Manual bumpers.
Yeah, just to save some edits. Just fucking do it all live.
Podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. This is episode number 207, and we're back.
Hey,
we are.
Hey, everybody. Sorry about some downtime. I'm your host, Matt.
And I'm Scott.
And I'm Ash.
And we're here to talk about stuff and things.
We've got
missing
a lot of catching up to
missing
do.
A week sucked. It was painful. Like, the tweets back and forth between all of us, like, we can't believe we're missing a week.
Yeah.
But there's literally, like, logistically, there was no way we could do it. Like, I kept getting home late and fucking things up. And then everything just kind of kept falling apart, and I was away for a bit. So it was painful. We haven't missed very many over the years.
Well, yeah, and last weekend was ending travel time, and I couldn't pull one together, and it was just, you know, everybody had stuff, and we just couldn't do it for a week. So
yeah,
that's okay. We deserve a break every once in a while.
Yeah, summer vacay. Did you guys have a good summer vacay?
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah.
Wow.
This episode is brought to you by Loot Crate. Hey, guys.
Hey.
What's better than Heroes?
Heroes, more Heroes?
Heroes 2!
Yeah.
What? Good guess.
In a world where bad eggs and madmen run amok, where evil bearded doubles hold sway and boorish wizards will do anything in pursuit of magic golden triangles, you can always count on Heroes to save the day. I can't believe I got through that sentence, guys.
That was pretty good.
It was challenging enough.
Was that your first time reading it, too?
It was my first time reading it.
Wow.
This month, we have several brave and bold items. There it goes. It's gone. Bold
Jinx
items
yourself.
From DC Entertainment. Oh, God. A licensed Legend of Zelda wearable and an enterprising Star Trek item with a whiff of whimsy and our very first hardcover Loot Crate edition book. Ooh, that's
neat.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the loot you deserve and the loot you need right now. Go to lootcrate.com/ratedNA and use the code ratedNA and you get 10% off your subscription. And it helps the podcast out. We say it every time, but it really does. And we really appreciate Loot Crate for consistently sponsoring the show.
Excellent. Yeah.
Let's do the rundown.
There's been some news. Obviously, E3 has transpired and we have not had a chance to talk about some things. And then... you guys have been the Batman over the past week or so. So I'm sure you'll want to talk about that. And then Ash, looks like completed The Witcher. So we'll get the, kind of the final impressions about The Witcher. And then in our sort of post past future tense question of the week, we asked, what excited you most at E3 2015? Let's talk to Ash because Ash went to E3. You actually went to E3.
I did. My E3 experience mainly consisted of me standing in a room for about 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't get a chance to run around E3 all that much. I did get a chance to hit up the floor for a couple hours on the last day. And it was awesome. It was my first time actually going to E3. I've done PAX and SDCC and all those quite a bit. But E3, I've never gotten to go to. And it's huge. It's bigger than I was actually expecting. I kind of always expected it to be PAX size, but it's actually quite a bit larger.
Really?
And yeah, and a lot of the booths from a lot of the bigger companies like Xbox, Sony, you know, they're just massive. They're colossal. So it was interesting to see the scale difference compared to PAX.
But this is not an event that's open to the general public, right?
That's also what was interesting. It wasn't really crowded. People say E3 is crowded, but it's not even fucking close to like some of the cons I've been to. If you've been to like San Diego Comic-Con and seen like the 125,000 people wandering around, shuffle walking for 4 days.
Right, right.
E3 was nice and spread out and you could just, you know, walk along and take your time, and it was kind of interesting to see. I mean, you know, there were a lot of people there, but it was nothing in comparison to those other shows.
Was the floor comparable to SDCC, like that size or smaller?
It was still smaller than that. It was divided into two primary halls, and each one of the primary halls had, you know, probably, I don't know, maybe 30 different developers at each one of various sizes.
Wow.
And some of them, like Bethesda, just had, you know, massive displays with like vaults and, you know, crazy, like, you know, just insane props and everything everywhere.
Wow.
So,
wow.
You know, whereas at PAX, you might get, you know, maybe three or four or five like big props of like, you know, the Evolve monster or something. Mm-hmm. All that big stuff was in full display at E3. So they had like, you know, the actual cars from Mad Max there to promote the Mad Max game, and people were walking around as zombies for different zombie games. So it was kind of a spectacle. It was really cool just to walk around for a few hours. But, you know, it was a learning experience. I had a really good time. You know, I was there for Sword Coast Legends, and we did a lot of press and stuff, and people seemed to like the game, which was great.
Yeah.
And, you know, hanging out in L.A. was cool. I went and saw Jurassic World at the Grauman's Chinese Theater in IMAX 3D, which was cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So that was a neat experience, even though the movie was at like 10:30 and it was our first night there. So it was like 1:30. So we didn't get out till like almost 4 a.m.
Oh, my God.
So wow. I think I remember like 1 minute of that movie. I was kind of in and out of consciousness throughout the entire thing because I'm old and I can't do that shit anymore. But that was really fun. And what else? You know, beat The Witcher 3. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Picked up Batman. Been playing that. Been working like crazy. All on good stuff, though. So it's been good, kind of fun work. And let's talk to Matt next.
Hello.
Hi, Matt.
Hello.
I'm not eating a banana right now. I'm sorry.
Caught you off guard.
Are you at least erotically eating that banana?
Sure. I mean, I just jammed it down my throat. Is that erotic to you?
I guess.
Okay. Whoa.
let's see. So it's been a couple weeks. I was watching the spectacle of E3 and working a bunch for the first week. But I downloaded Fallout Shelter. Did either of you guys download this to your phone?
I played it for 5 minutes.
Oh, it has taken over. I don't know why. It's like the most ridiculous tap game and wait game ever created. It's literally everything's just a timer. You know, you're basically just managing 30 timers for unknown reasons, and I'm doing it. I have no idea why. I have something like 60 people in my vault now, 60 or 70, and I have a bunch of rooms. I don't know why. I have no idea why I'm playing it. It's just like I can't stop playing it now, though. It's very weird.
Interesting. Yeah, I downloaded it and I was like, so is this a game? Or like, what am I supposed to be doing? It reminds me of base management in XCOM, except you don't get to go out and fight in any missions.
Well, you can send a guy out, but you don't really know what he does. He just collects things.
Yeah.
It's fun though. Like it's like weird, dumb toilet fun, I guess is the way to put it. Like it's when you're just sitting and have literally nothing else to do that.
Can episode 207 be called weird, dumb toilet fun?
Weird, dumb toilet fun. Sure. Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Great.
So I played a bunch of that. I picked up Batman, actually, because we won't talk about this in the review, but I pre-ordered it on Amazon. I think I told you guys this, but pre-ordered it on Amazon and to get the hardcover prequel comic that was coming with it.
Yeah.
And because I think it's written by like Grant Morrison. It's like a quality thing that they put together for it. Excuse me. And I was like, okay, cool. Pre-ordered, no big deal. And then on like Saturday, Amazon writes me and they're like, okay, cool, it'll arrive by Friday. And I was like, what? Why? Like, it's supposed to arrive day of. Like, I pre-ordered it on like Wednesday or Thursday. Like, it was plenty of time to get that order to me, you know? And so I canceled it like immediately when I got the email. I was like, well, screw this. I canceled it, bought it digitally, had it downloaded before I got home on Monday. And then Monday night at 12:01, I turned it on and started playing. And I was like, it was annoying to a degree that like Amazon was like, well, nope, you're not getting it anymore. And it made me realize why I do like digital in a certain way. You know, I'm like, oh, this was very convenient and easy. And I'll go buy the hardcover book for $10 if I feel like I want it later on.
Can I add to your discussion of this real quick?
Yeah.
Okay. So I think that, you know, we're kind of reaching a point now where some of these retailers or even the distributors need to invent some way to just send you the packaging with a digital code at this point,
right?
You know?
No, yeah.
Because what if, you know, what if you want the Pip-Boy, but you just want the digital code?
Exactly.
Or what if you want a new Rock Band guitar, but you don't want the disc? Like, you just want the game, you know? And obviously, there's still a market for physical pre-order bonus goodies. At the same time, not everybody, you know, wants a disc like in this new console world that we're in.
Yeah.
So that's a really interesting, it's an interesting problem to solve. I don't know how you can solve that from like an Amazon perspective.
I mean, I feel like it's solvable, but it creates like wasted packaging too on top of that.
But yeah, but I mean, I'm saying unless you are the type of person that still wants the packaging,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
and you want the thing and you want like, maybe you want to have the steel box for Batman, but you don't need to have the disc in there.
Right.
It was kind of like, Microsoft's original version, vision for the Xbox One, where it's like they would send you the disc, you could install it to your drive, and then you would never need to use the disc again.
Scott, they were proven wrong by the internet.
Yeah,
they decided not to do it.
Yeah,
because people want to trade their discs, which is something that no one really does.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, exactly.
So,
well, there you go.
Anyways, yeah. I mean, but
and what are we doing? Playing... Everybody's buying digital now, anyways.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah,
I've been playing that all week, and it's been something we will talk about later.
Cool.
You'll have to wait.
Okay.
And then, did you guys watch Mr. Robot?
I have not.
No.
I do not blame you, because A, it's called Mr. Robot. B, it's on USA.
Yeah. Characters welcome.
So I'm sure you looked at that and thought, nope, and just marked that one off your list and decided never to go back to it. It is legitimately very good. Like, very good. I had seen it and I was interested. I was like piqued a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then the reviews started rolling out for it. And like everybody was like, oh my God, this show is way better than it deserves to be. And I think the best one was like Uproxx or somebody wrote a review. And the first half of the review was just about how giddy and excited they were to make fun of a show called Mr. Robot on USA. And they were like, please, dear Lord, have somebody named Mr. Robot in the show. And like all this stuff. they really wanted the main character's name to be Mr. Robot. And he would like CSI style hack computers and stuff. And that is not what it is at all. It is sort of dark and really well written and very well acted by the main guy who was in Night at the Museum or whatever. He's he's Tutankhamun in Night at the Museum. He's the main
Kamun-Ra.
Or Kamun-Ra, yeah. He's he's the main guy in Mr. Robot. His name is not Mr. Robot. His name's Elliot. And he plays this like morphined out, like he takes morphine to deal with his anxiety. Kind of like in a house sort of way, you know, like that's he talks about how not to get addicted to it. Like he can take X amount every day and not get addicted. And he works in the security side of this big tech firm that's doing security for a company called Eron or Ecom. That's what it is. Or E-Corp, sorry, not Enron, but E-Corp. But the logo is literally a tilted E. It looks exactly like they're not even remotely hiding that it's Enron at all.
Right.
And then so he works in there, and then like he's sort of somewhat getting pulled into this kind of black hat hacker group. And but he otherwise had been doing his own like hacktivism on the side, where he would like find child porn in the internet, figure out who did it, and then like turn them into the police, and not for money or anything, just literally do it because that was what he thought was right, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the way he plays it is not, it's just done very well. He's really good in this show, and I can't recommend it enough. I know that's like a little mini review, but it's free. You can watch the first episode for free just about anywhere right now, which I think is brilliant on USA's part. I watched it on Xbox Video. Like it was
cool.
You can download and watch for free. I think it's on YouTube for free. They put it all over the place to watch the first episode. But it is legitimately very good. Like very, very good.
Cool.
So I really recommend everybody go watch Mr. Robot, because I actually think it's going to turn into something pretty awesome. So
sweet.
I did that last night, and that was about it. Been reading the fifth book in the old
Expanse
series. It's very good, as it should be. Different, but very good.
Okay.
And we'll talk about that a little bit probably next week, maybe, if I finish it. And
sweet.
That's about it. You guys want to talk some news?
Hey, what about me?
No, let's go to news.
Womp womp.
You haven't been here. You don't get to talk about stuff you're doing. Sorry.
It's like I lost my desk and everything.
Yeah. You came back. You're like, hey, guys, I'm back. And like your desk, like somebody else was sitting at your desk already. Like, and we're like, oh.
We forgot to tell you.
Yeah.
I also have your swing line stapler.
Yeah. So
sorry,
Tom's using your computer now. Sorry.
Go ahead, Scott.
Okay.
Let's hear what you've been up to.
Okay. Well, let's see. There was a sale. Let me add something to your Xbox Video story real quick.
Yes.
If you are in the sort of Xbox ecosystem, I would encourage everybody to sign up for their loyalty program, which is called Xbox Rewards. It's a totally free program, but they basically give you rebates for buying things on Xbox. And that includes games and movies, and sometimes they do little challenges or, you know, promotions for specific types of content. So
we need like a superhero sound for the Price Hacker. It's like the Price Hacker, wop, 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 like that. Well, kind of.
It's a thing that exists. You just sign up for it and you take a survey every month and you get some credit. And then you, when you buy stuff, you get credit. And if you pre-order a game from the Microsoft Store, you'll get, like, instead of getting $10 back, they'll give you $15 if you use Xbox Rewards. But the thing that I wanted to talk about, since you mentioned Xbox Video, is that I think for the next month, starting yesterday, they're running a promotion where if you spend, I think, over $5 in the Xbox Video store, you get like 5,000 credits, which is equivalent to $5.
Huh.
So, you know, I think their HD rentals are like $6 standard. Yeah. So,
oh, I watched The Kingsman too.
Yeah, that's what I was going to do. I was going to rent that now that I know that I can get a credit for it. So I'm gonna check that out. And so,
but
they
can't tell me you don't want, like, it'd be like, here's another tip from the Price Hacker, pow, 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 pow. And then you, like, then you drop some knowledge.
Yeah, if you want to put that drop together, feel free. Or if a listener wants to put that drop together, everybody's familiar with the quality of the drops on this show, so it just needs to meet or exceed that bar, I think, is all you need to do. Yeah, so there was a sale last week, and I downloaded a game called Numa Breath of Life. And the reason why I got it was because I think it was only $10. And at the time, I think the game was sort of sold as, hey, it's a puzzle game, but it's one of the first games to use the new Unreal Engine, I think, on the Xbox.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, cool. I mean, lots of
like puzzle game and Unreal Engine.
Yeah. Turns out you can complete the entire game in about 2 hours, and the textures are not like super like impressive to me, the way that they looked. But I think what, you know, the flashy part of the engine was, is that there were a lot of interesting lighting effects and different effects, like looking through glass and light reflecting through glass and stuff like that. So I don't know, if you're an achievement junkie like me, there's a game called Numa Breath of Life that you can pretty much 100% in about 2 hours.
Yeah, I even messaged Matt like a week ago. I was like, what the fuck? I was like looking at my Xbox friends, and I was like, Scott has like 1,900 achievement points this month. And like, you were like at the top of my list of everyone. And I'm like, what the fuck? He's not playing video games.
Yeah. Well, I did that. And yeah, I know.
Sorry, guys. Don't have time. I've got to play. Got to take care of the baby. That's what it is.
Well, that's pretty much the level that I can participate at this point. So that was something that I did within a couple of sittings. But I don't know, if you know, it's a first person puzzle game. So if you like games like Quantum Conundrum or I don't know, Myst or something, I don't know, it's a game like that.
Actually, you know what? Jen Jarvis has more than
That's what I was going to say.
Jen Jarvis is a beast.
She's crushing it. I'm looking forward to the day where she surpasses my gamer score.
Will.
I know. She's like, at the rate that she's at, it'll happen probably within the next year or so. It's pretty awesome.
I'm surprised you don't have the day quantified at this point.
Maybe I'll make a little, I'll make a graph and I'll send it to her. I'll be like, here's your target date. Yeah. And I really like the stuff that she plays too. I'm always like, what is she playing? Oh, awesome.
Yeah, she has good taste in
podcasts.
She picked
up that,
too.
There was a game that recently came out that was supposed to be like a, I think it's like you're exploring a desolate planet or something. Did you see that? It was like a indie title that came out. So I picked that up. If I have time, that might be what I look into next. But I did catch up on Game of Thrones, episode 4. Which I thought was a little better than the previous episodes. I know, Ash, that you really enjoyed all of them except for the first episode.
Yeah, I think they got better as they progressed. So the thing is, I played them all back to back. My wife was out of town, so I just was like, I'll play 2, 3, and 4 in one sitting, and I ended up really enjoying the experience. So
yeah, I mean, I thought 4 in particular had a lot of varied gameplay in it, which made it really interesting. And the plot was like, the entire plot of episode 4 moved along than the entire season of episode 5 on HBO. So
yeah,
just as a point of comparison, I mean, like we got like a half a season out of
them. I'll probably end up playing them on the plane rides to and from Comic-Con, because it's kind of become my plane ride game, you know, and it's just haven't gone anywhere lately. But
a telltale game.
Yeah, the Telltale.
That was good.
Thanks. And then other than that, I've been working a lot. I listen to audiobooks to and from work, so I'm listening to Abaddon's Gate. I'm almost at the end of that, which is the third book in the Expanse series. So
Did you have that moment halfway through the book where you realized what the ending of the book was going to be and you were like, oh, man, this is the thing?
Well, I think I know what the end is because, I mean, since you've said that, I've been trying to figure it out and I have a pretty good idea of what's going to happen. And if I'm right, I'm pretty excited about it.
Right. Well, I think what's amazing about that book in particular is that when you do realize it, no matter where you are in the book, like it doesn't bum you out. You're not like, oh, I figured out the ending, which is like what most books I feel like you'd be like, oh, I already know what this is going to go, you know, like whatever. Instead, you're just like, oh my God, I want to get to that point. I just want to keep reading until I get to this point. It's amazing.
Yeah, I will say, and I was talking to someone on Twitter about this too. I really do miss Ava Sarala in this book.
She comes back. So.
Oh, okay. Well, great. That's all I need to know.
Worries.
Maybe other people missed her as well. And that's why they had to bring her back.
I mean, she comes back. She kind of becomes and remains a minor character, but she doesn't disappear from the universe entirely.
Yeah, I mean, because so far throughout these books, like none of the ancillary characters have even been like mentioned, you know.
Yeah.
Characters in book one don't show up in two and three
right.
and so on.
Yeah, because they move locations so quickly. But I think the people who end up staying around are Fred and Ava Sarala, or how do you say it again? You said it right.
Ava Sarala.
Yeah, Ava Sarala. Yeah. Sorry.
And the last thing that I don't think I talked about before is that one of our favorite bands, Metric, has new music out. And to promote their new album that is coming out, they released on their website a cassette tape that you could buy, which is essentially a pre-order for the full album.
Right.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, but they have these cool, like, it's an actual cassette tape. It's got four tracks on it, and there was a limited release where they actually autographed the inside of the cassette sleeve, which is pretty neat. So
awesome.
Yeah, and I know we have some, we don't really talk a lot about music on this show too much, but that's one of our favorite groups for sure. So
you don't speak for me.
Oh, I'm sorry, that's one of my favorite groups. I know Ash likes them too.
Yeah,
so if you're a Metric fan, they got some new music coming and that's going to be awesome. So now, should we talk about the news?
News.
Before we get into the E3 news, I wanted to quickly talk about what's happening with Destiny and Dying Light.
I don't honestly understand what's happening at all. So
okay. Well, I'm having a really hard time following the Destiny story, but to my knowledge, what
you guys
done...
got like 30 levels ahead of me and I stopped playing entirely and then I just haven't gone back at all.
Yeah. Oh, well, they definitely have a problem of somehow keeping their current players happy while trying to bring back the old players that like finish the story and quit, right?
Right.
But that being said, they announced a new piece of DLC that's called like the Fallen King or the Taken King or Return of the King. I don't know.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be, you know, it's billed as like getting back to our Halo roots, which is awesome. But the price of the DLC is $40. And I think in some regions, the only way that they were kind of offering this game was as an ultimate edition of the Destiny game, which meant that you would end up buying Destiny with this DLC and then some additional pre-order goodies for, I don't know, $60 or $80 or something like that. So that made people mad. And then they said, okay, well, you know, you can buy the DLC separately for $40, but then you won't get these like extra bonus goodies. And people got mad about that. And then they said, okay, well, we'll make the bonus goodies available, but they'll be like $20 or something for some extra emotes and a shader or something like that. And so people got mad about that. And then they announced that there will be a timed mission release that is associated with the new DLC that you can unlock early by purchasing cans of Red Bull. And so that made people angry. And
wow.
Yeah, so developer Techland, who makes the fantastic game Dying Light, a Polish game development company, Dying Light is an awesome game if no one's ever had a chance to play it. It's like Mirror's Edge with, you know, zombie fighting. They basically went on Twitter to make fun of them, make fun of this whole thing. And so their original tweet was, we're jumping on the latest trend in game marketing. And they put up this whole graphic that looks like a Destiny graphic. And they're like, level up your game with the real king of hydration featuring water. And so basically it started as you know, they wanted you to tweet a picture of yourself drinking a glass of water with the hashtag drink for DLC. And so many people started doing it that they turned it into a full-fledged like Twitter marketing campaign.
Wow.
So now they've got five levels of tweets with five DLCs that they are going to unlock. They just decided, like, you know what? We're going to make this into a full thing, and we're going to produce four more pieces of DLC on top of our original campaign. So now if you, you know, take a picture, hashtag drink for DLC, send it to them. They've been retweeting them all week. They will release codes that you can use to unlock content in the game. And those codes work the same way that shift codes do, if you're familiar with that.
So, oh, yeah. I love shift codes.
Yeah, so basically you just go to their, you know, Dying Light website, you type in your account, and then you type in the code, and then it unlocks the content in your game. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah. So that's the little, I think it's funny.
It is. And, you know, there's, when you look at some of the decisions the guys controlling Destiny, and I don't want to say it's the developers. I want to say it's probably, you know, their marketing team and probably their publishers as well. But there have been a lot of questionable things that they've done since the very beginning with that game. And it's just, it's a shame because I think at its core, the game, the mechanics of the game are great. Like, it's really fun to play. It's just so much of it is just locked behind bullshit. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. it's
the leveling system is so difficult too. And if they, I think that this Taken King thing is actually going to have a level requirement to get into it. So,
yeah,
you know, at that point it's like, do you equip all of the returning and new players with some gear that automatically puts them at level X? You know, but then that probably angers all the, you know, all the people that spent all the time to get there. You know, on top of them sort of changing some of the rules and weapon mechanics, like, you know, throughout the course of this game. So I don't know. Enough of that. Dying Light is a great game. Let's talk about E3.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
So E3 was crazy this year. And I think the great thing about this particular E3 was that everybody kind of won for the most part. It was a very positive E3, I think, for the industry as a whole. There was a lot of really cool stuff going on.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the big competition of, like, who won, Microsoft, Sony, I think kind of, at least to me, it felt like that wasn't as important this year.
Like, I feel like we won. I feel like gamers win.
I was really proud. I think I tweeted out something about it. I said, hey, I'm glad everybody's having a good E3 and we're all happy about this, but just remember, one of us needs to side with a billion-dollar corporation and choose a winner by the end of all of this.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, and that's the sad truth, right? But yeah, I feel like, you know, I think Microsoft did really well. Sony did really well. A lot of people think some of the stuff Nintendo showed off was pretty cool as well. And there are just a lot of great games. So what I figured we'd do is just kind of quickly talk about some of the big things and then, you know, kind of just chat and talk about how cool of an E3 this was. And I think the first thing that surprised the crap out of everybody was that Microsoft announced that the Xbox One is going to have backwards compatibility with the Xbox 360. Yeah. So what do you guys feel about that?
Slowly rolled out, right? Like, games have to get whitelisted and tested before they get put into the backwards compatibility. But I think it's good. Like, why would it be bad? You know?
No, I mean, it's only good. I know a couple of things about this. My understanding of this is that they weren't even sure they were able to do it themselves. But I think the way that it works is that they were able to put a virtual machine running inside of the Xbox One that would allow you to play Xbox 360 games.
Yeah, so the Xbox One already runs on virtual machines. That's like how they architected it. So everything that's why you can do multi-windowed stuff like while you're playing is because it just basically fires up another VM, grabs some resources, and does that over here. I think what they were having trouble with wasn't just firing up a VM for the backwards compatibility. That was sort of the easy part. It was the actual architecture guts of x86 versus what was the old architecture? Was that the old architecture?
I don't remember
the exact terminology, but basically the chipsets that run these two different products were so varied that they couldn't figure out if they could get the VM to run those older games on this one. So I think it's amazing. I did read, I'm not even going to mention where I read it because it's so shitty and stupid, but I read it on a place where they were bitching
bathroom
about
stall.
I meant the outlet of which I read it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wrote this like shitty think piece about how this is terrible and Microsoft still loses because they shouldn't have wasted time trying to get backwards compatibility in if they couldn't do it at launch. And I was like, oh my God, guys. Yeah. Like, can we not like anything in this world anymore? Yeah.
It's like, you don't, if you don't like it, you don't have to use it. But
yeah, fortunately, I think I only saw that sentiment from like one place and not many places. So that made me happy. But yeah, I think it's good. I don't remember the initial launch set of games is pretty small and it wasn't anything huge yet, right?
Right now they are mostly Microsoft published games, which is how, if anybody remembers, that's how you get Mass Effect, because the original Mass Effect was published by Microsoft before EA took that under their wing. So a lot of the games are, you know, like the launch titles. So like Cameo, Elements of Power, and Perfect Dark, stuff like that. But they say that they're going to have 100 games by the end of the year.
That's great.
And then basically it is up to the publishers to approve the games, and then they need to test the games to make sure that they work. I don't think that, my understanding is that any game that used the Kinect is not going to be able to be used in this way. So that kind of cuts out some stuff like Dance Central, which is a bummer. I mean, there's a new Dance Central, but like, you know, for DLC purposes, it would be nice. And, you know, obviously some of this will probably also be limited by things that are being re-released now. So, you know, the top game that people are requesting on the feedback website is Red Dead. So you'll probably get a game like that, but you probably won't get Grand Theft Auto 5 or Dishonored because all these games are being re-released in Ultimate Edition packaging. So, you know, for what it's worth, like, I think a good place to start would be to try to get some of the games out that were previous games with gold releases for Xbox 360, because people already have those feasibly.
Yeah,
that might be a good approach, you know, but, you know, considering anything that I said prior with things that have been re-released. So
what interests me is if there's going to be any sort of performance increase due to the new hardware. Like, are the games going to run more smoothly? Are the load times going to be less? Mm-hmm. You know, is the fidelity?
You probably see stuff like that. I don't know that you're going to see any, like, graphics bumps or anything along those lines.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting, though.
Cool.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
So, Elite Controller.
I didn't actually know much about this. Can you guys, like, Ash, did you get to see it or touch it at all?
I got to see it behind like a little glass thingy, but it's got flippers on it and it costs like $150 or $125 bucks, right?
Yeah, the controller is meant to be for, you know, because esports is popular now. It's meant to be for competitive gaming, you know, gaming, even if it's competitive against your friends, you know, and you want to get that quote edge or whatever. They're designing an Elite controller that has it's got a bunch of features. They redesigned the way that it feels. The center of gravity is a little different. They added a switch that you can use to sort of lock the triggers so that the action is smaller on the triggers so that you can shoot faster feasibly. And all of the knobs are interchangeable. So on the current Xbox One controller, the sticks are kind of high compared to the previous controller.
Right.
And I think that this Elite controller will have two shorter sticks that you can attach to either side. So if you want like a shorter action on the stick, so you don't have to put as much leverage on, I think you can do that. The D-pad is swappable for sort of a circular D-pad that is more appropriate for fighting games, if you want to do that. And then it's got flippers on the backside of it, which I'm not sure what those are for. Maybe like game macros or something, so you can set up custom controls. Elite controller. It's supposed to be made for esports people. Supposedly what they did was they went to all of the major gaming competitive genres and they looked at the sort of the top games in those genres, and they looked at the people at the top of the leaderboard and then went and interviewed those people and watched them play games to figure out what they would need to build into this controller to make it worthwhile to, you know, like pro style gamers. So they put a lot of effort into it and it seems cool. The price point is pretty high, but they asked people. They went, I was listening to this. They talked about it on the most recent episode of the Major Nelson podcast. They actually like looked at Battlefield 4, saw who was at the top of the leaderboard, contacted those people and said, "Hey, is it cool if we come and watch you play video games for a little while and talk to you about what you want to see on your controller?" So
that's cool.
That's awesome.
Seems pretty neat. Yeah. If you're into, you know, with games like Gigantic coming and I think like, what is that? Smite is another MOBA game. And then, you know, obviously your shooters and everything. Elite controller might be something that you want if that's your style.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Speaking of shooting.
Yes.
Matt. Gears of War 4.
Oh, you skip over Halo 5.
Hey, I'm excited about both of these games.
I am too.
Yeah, me too. I'm actually super excited. Let's do Halo first. I was just fucking around.
All right.
I mean, there's not much to talk about. We've talked about this game ad nauseum, I feel like, already. We just want it at this point.
Yeah, it's a four-player
campaign.
And
the co-op's going to be killer. Like, let's do this.
Yeah, you know? It's got Nathan Fillion in it, Jennifer Hale, right?
Yeah.
I think is Laura Bailey in this one as well?
Laura Bailey's in it.
Laura Bailey, yeah.
Yeah.
Her husband, Travis Willingham, is in it. So it's got a killer cast. I actually did see the E3 demo that they did on stage. I don't know if you guys got a chance to see it, but it was like maybe 5 minutes of gameplay. Mm-hmm. And it looked awesome. Like, basically the whole team, four different players are working together against the Covenant. And, you know, it was very typical Halo, but they were able, the maps were huge, so they were able to kind of split the team up. And one team was like on a higher ledge doing supporting fire to the team below. And they were all working together to do, you know, all sorts of different crazy cool combos. So it looks great. I'm really excited for it.
The thing that I'm most excited for is this Warzone mode that they keep talking about. Have you seen that?
Yeah, this looks
huge,
crazy.
Like, was that the 24 player or whatever?
Yeah,
the...
I think it's going to be like, it's supposed to be like 12 on 12
versus
environment. So you're not just fighting against your other team. They have, you know, enemy factions that are going to be running around, which makes a lot of sense because I think it prevents people from camping out because now you've got these little AI players running around almost like in a Titanfall style, kind of trying to keep you moving.
Yeah.
Around and keep the action fresh so that one team doesn't just dominate the other team. There'll always be something happening, and it just looks like complete mayhem and seems like it would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I like that a lot too.
Yeah.
I mean, we've said it before. I think 343 is doing a very good job with these games, so
absolutely.
I'm definitely excited to see
it. Yeah, I thought, what was the last one? Was it Halo 4 was the last one?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a fantastic game. I played it in co-op too. It was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Gears of 4?
Yeah.
So they actually had gameplay revealed at E3, and it's cool.
Really,
it's
brightly lit gameplay.
It was kind of dark, but the thing I do like about it is they're kind of scaling things back, so it's no longer going to be four player. It's going to be, I mean, you can do four player in other modes, but the campaign is only going to be two players, at least to my knowledge. So it looks like a lot of the more claustrophobic feeling of the first game, that's going to be back, which I kind of liked, a little bit more of a horror type feel.
There's one thing about Halo I forgot to mention. There's no more split screen, right? Is that what I heard? The co-op is all going to be networked.
Oh,
yeah.
I did not hear that.
Yeah, I'll verify. Let me verify. You continue talking about Gears of 4.
So it doesn't look like Gears of War 4 is going to have, well, at least not as the main protagonist, the old cast. So we're not going to see the Marcus Fenix or the Coltrane as the main guys. So there's a new male and female primary protagonist. And then a lot of people are saying that it might be taking place on a completely different world. Because one thing that was never really touched upon was, like, did the COG soldiers actually ever leave the world of Sarah? Did they go someplace else to, like, try and colonize or something? Because if they did, they wouldn't be there when all that shit happened in Gears of War 3. So these might be different soldiers on a different planet. Some people are saying, you know, there's different moons or something in the background. So all the Gears of War fans are trying to freak out. And also in the demo that they played at E3, they weren't fighting against the Locust. So they were fighting against an all new kind of evil alien type thing.
Oh, awesome.
So very interesting, you know. Yeah, no modes have been revealed for this yet. The graphics look gorgeous, though. So I'm really eager to get my hands on this. This one won't be coming out until December probably of next year. So
did you guys get a chance to check out the Gears Ultimate multiplayer beta?
I did, actually. I played for about an hour, and then I got hit by lightning and my power went out for like 7 hours.
We had some brutal storms last week. Yeah,
I attempted to get into four different games and never got started.
Oh,
okay.
Well, the only thing
so
I
spent
to
about
say,
15 minutes trying, but it never happened.
I just wanted to say that it runs like butter. It looks really good. I mean, it's still multiplayer and people are like brutally good at it, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But that's pretty cool. So, I mean, if you're a big Gears fan, just like Halo, they're releasing all the games probably this, right? It's coming out this holiday. The Ultimate Edition.
Yeah, I think it was this holiday.
Yeah,
I'm excited. It looks gorgeous, and
it's
I read that
to be
they
like a
actually
unified multiplayer mode, right?
I don't know. I don't know what they're doing. I mean, they're bringing in like a lot of the old. Okay. First of all, I should probably say for that Gears of War redo that they're doing, they actually redid all the models and stuff. So they're not just up-resing stuff. They all the monster models, all the character models. They actually went in and redid them in the new engine. So it is going to be looking really, really pretty. So I think that's actually coming out before Christmas.
Yeah, I also heard that they may have gone back into Gears 1 and added, you know, some of the gameplay improvements from the later games.
Ah, that's cool.
Yeah, anyways, I heard that too.
Cool. All right, what's next?
The other thing was that a lot of people were happy, a lot of people were upset, but there was really no mention of Kinect from Microsoft. It's almost kind of like they're like, oh, we're just going to kind of turn our back on this piece of hardware.
It's unfortunate.
Once again, the internet proved them wrong, so they fixed that and they got rid of the Kinect. I mean, once you decouple it from the machine, it's like, what's the point anymore? You know, the guarantee with this new box was, hey, everyone will have one. Every developer can use it because everyone will have a Kinect. Mm-hmm. And then not even a year into selling it, they're like, no, maybe not everybody will have a Kinect, but like some people will have a Kinect. And then it's like, well, then we're back to square one. Like developers can't rely that it's there. They have to make these like crazy, you know, hoop jumping situations where they have to figure out if you have it and then deal with whether you do or don't. And then all it's going to become is sort of like an add-on to a game that as opposed to a feature, you know, because you can't rely that people will have it.
That's a shame too, because, you know, Xbox Fitness is really awesome. And then there's Fantasia and Dance Central, obviously. Not to mention the voice capabilities, but you know, you could see something down the line where they add in voice functionality in some other way separately from the Kinect. But if they do that, then that'll probably really, you know, signal the death of the Kinect. Not when the press signals the death of the Kinect, but when it actually ends. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's unfortunate because I think it's a pretty awesome piece of hardware, but I get it. Some people didn't want to spend money on it because they didn't see any value in it. And oh, well, what are you going to do?
Yeah. Okay. Sea of Thieves.
You guys know anything about this?
I don't even know what this is. I've never even heard of it.
It reminded me of Puzzle Pirates.
Dude, no. No, that is not. No. I'm so excited for this. This is a pirate simulator where you get a crew together and everybody on the pirate ship has a different job. So there's a guy that like steers. There's a guy that fires the cannons. There's a guy that controls the masts.
That's what Puzzle Pirates was.
No. And then you build your own pirates. And then you go on adventures and you fight against other pirate ships and go looking for treasure. And there's like a third person combat when you're out there exploring the wilds.
Well, everything up until you said third person combat, also Puzzle Pirates. it's puzzles, right? But this one's combat.
Oh my God.
It looks good. I'm giving you a hard time.
It looks like Tetris too, Scott.
No, it looks awesome. It really does seem cool. I like the whole team aspect of, you know, fighting together and working together on one, you know, vessel, I think is a really awesome idea.
Yeah, I mean, basically, I'm just kind of looking for new co-op experiences. I feel like, you know, co-op versus AI in shooting games is fun, but at this point, we've been doing it for a really long time. And I'm looking for new experiences where I can get in with you guys and with other friends and actually go on adventures and do different things that I haven't done before. And so far, I haven't been in a pirate ship doing piratey things with my buddies.
Mm-hmm.
So I like the look of Sea of Thieves. I think it looks like a lot of fun. It's just a question of like, if you're the guy that's sitting there controlling the sail, like, is that going to be the most boring thing ever in your life? You know?
Yeah,
so,
true.
It's a question of how they are gamifying those other jobs to make them at least enjoyable.
Right.
Maybe
there could be like puzzles that you solve while you're trying to put the sails up to make it more interesting.
You son of a bitch.
This is a game from Rare also, and so it's going to be an Xbox exclusive, which also might suggest that it could be a Windows game, like a cross-platform game.
Oh, cool. That'd be cool.
I mean, I'm not saying, like, there's no information to confirm that, but it is not outside of the realm of possibility.
Yeah,
for sure. So that would be awesome, too.
Well, let's shift over to Sony.
Mm-hmm. I didn't get to see this.
Sony felt like it was sort of a look back on the games of yore that they're going to like bring back to us, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Until they dropped the bomb of the last one, which was like, how long was the video of Uncharted when we get to it?
Oh, I don't know. It was pretty long though.
It was a decent size. It was just like, they were like, yeah. So we'll walk through these, but they were like, yeah. Final Fantasy VII, we're bringing it back. And it's like all redone and it looks good, you know?
Now, what was the tone of their conference? Because Microsoft is, you know, T-shirt and blazer, and then Sony is traditionally like the mob boss kind of look. on stage?
They still went with Mob Boss.
Okay, yeah. Got it.
But I feel like it's Mob Boss and Air Horns with Sony. Like, it's like
really?
It always feels like it. They're kind of like they like. It's as if they know what's going to make everybody freak out, so they just like waiting, like, and then they're just like, brum, 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 Uncharted 4, and you're like, ah, and his heads just start exploding and stuff, you know? So,
yeah.
I don't know.
So, I mean, you know, the thing that's been buzzing around since the Sony press conference is that they went basically for – they pulled the nostalgia card and were like, we're going to give you everything that you said that you wanted last year, and we're going to smash it in your fucking face. And that's what they did.
Did you guys play Final Fantasy VII?
Oh yeah, like
so you did
like
a long
death.
Time ago. I think I actually played it on PC.
Wow.
Yeah, I
personally
played it on PlayStation, but I mean, Does it feel weird thinking about going back to that game? I guess we're out of the Final Fantasy world. We've talked about this in the past, where JRPGs have kind of like we don't gravitate towards them anymore.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
I feel like it'd be weird to go back to Final Fantasy VII and try to play it again. I feel like it wouldn't have the same impact that it had on.
I tend
then.
To agree, and I don't know if you had a chance to listen to our buddies over at Reset Transmission talk about this. Like Mel was playing the game recently, and she said, you know, like to her, the game is unplayable. And I would almost agree. Like when I played the game,
just a couple of years
after it came out, I thought the game was unplayable.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just because of the way that the levels are designed and the sort of the blockiness of the characters and things like that.
I remember I got lost and stuck in the Chocobo racing.
Yeah, like a little casino. Part. Yeah.
Yeah, I got like stuck there forever, it felt like. I don't even remember. I just like couldn't get out of it. I didn't know where I was supposed to go. I was like, what is happening?
It's like, you know, it's a touching game with a lot of really great moments and some fun gameplay elements. But otherwise, if you go back and play today, I think it might look like a hot mess to someone that's never seen it before.
Yeah.
So I think a full like refresh of this game could really bring it into the modern.
Well, also,
era,
it feels
you know?
Like, you know, and without spoiling the 23-year-old game at this point, it also feels like the moment that everybody talks about in that game.
Holy shit, is it really that old?
I mean, it's...
Yeah, like, it was what? 90, I was 98, I think, 98. Or 97, maybe? So that's, but yeah, that's really... Oh my God, dude.
It's like 18 almost years old.
Yeah, welcome.
I remember playing that like yesterday.
Yeah.
Ugh.
It might have been 96, actually.
Might have been. I remember I played it in my apartment in Tampa. So,
yeah. But so the moment in that game that everybody remembers and talks about, I think the one big, huge moment in that game feels like kind of rewatching like Sixth Sense or something. Like it's like, I don't know. I'm worried that the impact of that game is of its moment and of its time. And now if you replay it, you're going to be like, oh, yeah, it was okay.
Yeah, I do think that they are from things that like rumblings I've heard. They're going to make some changes to the narrative. Everything's going to be voiced. It's going to be really cinematic. Yeah. So I think they're going to try and modernize it as much as possible. That being said, I still would love to see the turn-based combat. I really did like that a lot. So I hope they don't mess that up. But you're right. I think, you know, going back as an older person now playing that game, not even just for the graphical issues that it had, going back and playing it, you'd be like, oh man, like there's so many UI issues, right, Scott?
Yeah, correct. Absolutely correct.
Well, but maybe it introduces a game that back to a new generation that we, you know, again, like maybe this shows people why Final Fantasy is Final Fantasy, you know, to a whole new generation.
Because
I think it's lost some of that impact. It's not the force that it was, you know, in 96 or whatever.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So
because now we have like, you know, Western RPGs that sort of compete in that space too. So
correct.
Yeah. Anyways.
So The Last Guardian, do you guys care?
No.
I played Ico because, you know, I felt like I was supposed to play Ico.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, it didn't really like resonate with me. So I know people like these games, like this game and Shadow of the Colossus and stuff
Shadow
like
of
that.
The Colossus,
so, I mean, that's exciting if you're a fan of those two games. I didn't really get it when I played it.
I remember our friend Adam was like, Matt, you have to play Shadow of the Colossus. You have to play it. And then I played it and I was like, I don't really like this that much.
Yeah.
Like it just fell really flat for me and I felt bad the whole time.
Yeah.
And then and now everybody's all excited about these games and I'm like, oh, yay. Yeah.
I felt bad for not liking Shadow of the Colossus either.
Yeah.
I'm right there with you. But people are excited, so that's cool. It's the game they want.
Yeah.
And people should have, you know, what
things they want.
Play. Yeah. Cool.
Speaking of Shenmue 3.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Now on Kickstarter.
Yeah,
that's
didn't they
weird,
raise
right?
$2 million in a day or something
like
that?
It's like the fastest, increase, you know, fastest accumulation of wealth for one project, I think.
That's starting to weird me out a little bit. That big games just go to Kickstarter and raise millions of dollars.
What if Microsoft had walked out and been like, do you want Gears of War 4? Like, head over to Kickstarter.
Like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's like interesting. It's interesting. Like, what I read is that the developers of Shenmue?
I don't know.
I thought it was Shenmue, but the first one was on Dreamcast, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Sega Dreamcast.
I heard they wanted $10 million to make 3, and then Sony was like, I don't know about that. And so the whole idea of this Kickstarter was born to kind of lessen the blow of the production of the game because it was a gamble. So
it was to gauge interest as well.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting. I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. It's just weird that they did, like, as part of their giant Sony press conference, they talked about maybe a game being made if you give them money. That's kind of like, that's just different. And the fact that it was so successful really opens the doors. I mean,
Shenmue 2 sort of a flop? Like, didn't it not actually do that well?
Yeah, I heard it was like fans liked it, but it didn't sell very well.
Yeah.
It's always had a very, you know, a very small audience, but a very loyal audience just because of the, I guess, the open worldliness of it.
Mm-hmm.
I only played a little bit of the first one on Dreamcast and actually never got through it. So,
yeah.
And that being said, you know, $3 million is a lot of dollars, but it is not, that does not make a game, like a AAA game.
Right. Oh, no.
Not at all.
In the grand scheme of things. So that's something else to keep in mind, too.
If you're Destiny, you need $500 million.
Yeah, there you go. Right. In Red Bull.
Red Bull. Hey, Scott and I made the same joke same time.
Hey, there we go.
Yeah.
Nice.
So onto the air horn and the bass drop moment. They launch Uncharted 4 with like I swear to God, the trailer was like 15 minutes long. I feel like they just kept playing Uncharted 4. They were just like, please, Uncharted 4, it's coming.
Yeah.
Like, but it looks gorgeous. It was they showed a big chase scene, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys watch it or no?
Yeah,
I didn't get
a chance
to watch it. Yeah.
It looked great. And you know, my horrible guilty thing is I never played Uncharted 3 and I never beat Uncharted 2.
Oh, two was really good. Three was like pretty good.
Yeah. So what I'm waiting for is, I guess they're re-releasing these like HD remasters for the PS4. All the old Uncharted games. So I'm going to go through and blow through all of those, hopefully, at some point.
I think that's worth your time. I think that, you know, the first game was a little rocky in the same sense that Assassin's Creed 1 was kind of rocky in the gameplay.
Sure.
And then by 2 and 3, they kind of worked a lot of that stuff out. And so
I played 1. I don't think I beat it yet because I just barely ever turn on my PS3. But I played 1 and was enjoying it. I love the sort of like Indiana Jones feel of the whole thing. So
I feel like in this sort of new world of open world games, you know, technology enables open world games, the art of creating a linear masterpiece has sort of been lost to, you know, many companies except for Naughty Dog, right? With The Last of Us and the Uncharted series. And I don't know if this game is going to go the route of open world, but I, you know, 2 and 3 for what they're worth are really spectacular in that sense.
Yeah.
Same way, you know, same thing with, you know, Tomb Raider.
Yeah.
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 Tomb Raider looks great, the new one.
Yeah, surely does. You want a quick rundown of Nintendo?
Yeah. Do you have one?
Yeah, kind of. So they decided to do Nintendo World Championships, which was, you know, something that harkens back to the days of the Wizard, which I thought was kind of interesting. The final level was in the Super Mario Brothers Mario Maker game, which is coming out for the Wii U soon. So that was kind of neat, like a really challenging Mario level that they had to get through. And then they started talking about games. So kind of the big games are Xenoblade Chronicles and Star Fox Zero, which are...
Oh, yeah. Did they show Star Fox or did they just kind of announce it?
I don't know. I didn't really watch the press conference. And from what I heard, there were like Muppets in it. Like,
yeah,
you know,
that's what I heard.
Jim Henson's Creature Shop made Muppet versions of all of the Nintendo, you know, figureheads.
Reggie the Muppet. Yeah.
Yeah. But then, so then they got into some games. Like there's Yoshi's Woolly World, which looks, you know, super cute because it's all... you know, yarn and stuff like that. It's kind of the new cool thing in games is to make your characters out of yarn.
Yeah.
And but then they got into some other games. They're like, we're not going to give you a Mario game, but we're going to give you Mario Maker. And we're not going to talk about Zelda this year, but we're going to give you Legend of Zelda Triforce Heroes, which is one of those cooperative games. I think there was a older cooperative Four Swords game back in the day. I think this is like that. And then they were like, Metroid, but not Metroid, Metroid Prime Federation Force, which is looks like some kind of weird cyber sports game or something. It's like a multiplayer game. A lot of people got upset about that. And then
Go ahead, sorry.
I was going to say, no new Animal Crossing, but Animal Crossing Happy Home Designer, which is you just designing, I guess, the house in Animal Crossing, which is something you can do in the current game.
How many jokes is Ash holding in right now?
I know. There's going to be Amiibo cards.
I'm trying to be a gentleman.
Yeah, and then they announced new Amiibos, and I think those were sort of the highlights. So really, I mean, it's kind of like Yoshi's Woolly World if you're into the platformers. Star Fox and Xenoblade, for me, are sort of the highlights there.
Because the Mario Maker game, while interesting, sort of just feels like they're trying to be like, isn't Minecraft cool? What if it was Mario Minecraft?
Yeah.
Why are you doing that?
Yeah, not being of that generation, my feeling is sort of like, how about you build the game and I play it? Like, I don't want to have to build my game and play it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Okay. But yeah, I kind of got the same drift. And then from what I understood, even the Star Fox announcement, while it should have been amazing, felt sort of like it fell a little flat, so... Yeah. You know, Nintendo, still kicking along, just selling you Amiibos.
Yeah.
And lots of 3DSs.
And they definitely announced some cool Amiibos that I want to get, so I'm still, there you go.
Oh, yeah? You going to throw some elbows at Walmart for those?
I will not. I'll just solve my problems with money at this point. I don't really want to get into it. So let's talk about a couple of games.
Games.
Starting with Mass Effect Andromeda, which we totally got teased with.
Yeah, so this is the one that our audience is probably the most excited to hear about.
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah, I mean, it looks cool. I think they're going for, you know, they opened up with some Johnny Cash and showed a very kind of a moody look at what the new Mass Effect is going to be like. And I like that, like the kind of Firefly-esque barren feel of it all. Like you're going to be on this ship exploring the unknown, you know, because the other, you know, Mass 1, 2, and 3, the galaxy was pretty crowded. There was a lot of shit, a lot of people everywhere. And this, I kind of... You know, they're almost going Star Trek, like the bold unknown in the middle of nowhere, just exploring. I really like that. So what did you guys think about it?
I think that the game is going to be sort of like tonally more like Mass Effect 1 with Mass Effect 3 improved gameplay.
Awesome. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Because
like, sort of the one-on-one, sort of like singular bad guy storyline kind of thing.
Well, more of like
back into a universe.
Yeah. More of like, hey, explore the universe. Drop down in your Mako, drive around, you know, find things that you like, maybe weren't told to go somewhere. I mean, I love the Mako.
I'm fucking with you.
all you have to do is drive diagonally. You don't drive straight up the mountain. You drive diagonally up the mountain and you'll get there. Every time you'll get there. But if you remember at the end of the Mass Effect 1 life cycle, they released the DLC that took place on the moon, which really showed that they were able to do a whole lot more with an open environment than just like drive around and go to all the hotspots and then leave or whatever. So here we are now many years later. And if you take that same idea and flesh it out with, you know, all the new stuff they've done since then, I really think it's going to be a special game. I'm really excited.
I mean, they probably could have announced Mass Effect, you know, spaceship toilet simulator, and I would still be down to try it out. So
correct.
I think the trailer looked awesome. I love the tease of the sort of Wild West. I agree with you, Ash, that I like the idea that maybe we're getting a little less crowded on this turnaround. We get to start over kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be good. I'm excited.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, Mass 3 went so big, like end of the universe apocalypse with like giant fucking space battles. And there's just like, okay, it'll be cool to kind of get a little bit more intimate, smaller story, perhaps, you know, new crew members, hopefully some old ones do show up. But you know, I'm all for it. I think it looks great. And the thing that no one's talking about yet, cause they probably won't announce it for like another 8 months, but they're definitely going to be building a multiplayer co-op.
I
want to
play that so badly.
Holy shit.
I want that now.
Right? Like it's going to be so good to get back in there with you guys and run around as the different multiplayer
characters. Dude, I missed that Mass 3 multiplayer so badly. Like I wish there was like a weekend where we could all just sit around and play it, but I know it's just so hard to do that.
Well, hopefully they bring that to Mass 3. They bring that to Xbox One, and then we can just play again because that'd be easy.
Absolutely.
Cool. I put this one here for Scott.
Yeah. Mirror's Edge Catacalyst.
Catacalyst.
So, you know, it looks like Mirror's Edge Catalyst is going to be sort of a prequel game.
Yeah.
And it looks great. There's Faith is not going to be able to handle any guns, which I think is really awesome. So, you know, really the major complaint about the first game is people don't want to get into combat because it's meant to be this free-running experience where she doesn't fight people head-on and needs to kind
I actually explained that to somebody at work. They were talking to me about Mirror's Edge, and they're like, oh, are you excited? And I was like, yeah, I love Mirror's Edge. I think it's going to be great. And they were like, yeah, the first one, man, like the combat was just so bad. And I was like, we weren't really supposed to get into combat. They were like, what? And I'm like, no, you're supposed to run around. Like, the whole point of the game is to run around, like get around the combat and like get to where you're going quickly. And it was like, it wasn't a combat game. And he was like, oh, it was like blew his mind open. Yeah. Like, oh, that makes way more sense as the game. I'm like, yeah, you're not supposed to get into gunfights. So, she's terrible at it.
Yeah. So the two things that I saw, I mean, obviously the game looks gorgeous and it's Mirror's Edge, so that's great. The two things I saw is that Faith is not going to be handling weapons, which is cool. And then I think I read somewhere that the way that they kind of balanced out the quote unquote combat is that as long as she's in her the free running flow, I think she is immune to gunfire, which kind of makes sense conceptually, where it's like, oh, she's just moving so fluidly that, you know, she doesn't take any damage and she can avoid the gunfire. Right. So that kind of solves the problem of getting shot at while you're trying to play the game.
Yeah, because you would get knocked out of your run sometimes. And
Sense. Like the idea is that you want to stay in this like fluid movement. And I think that they're really working towards doing that. Awesome. And then on top of that, this game also the old game had, you know, trials and some additional gameplay modes. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with that, too.
Cool. Sweet.
Yep. You want to talk about The Division? I saw this demo.
Man.
It looks pretty BA. Yeah.
It does look awesome. One thing I saw, Scott, that you're going to be upset about is they took out the mobile support. So no more drones or anything.
That's a bummer. I feel like, you know, after all the stuff they tried to put in the previous Assassin's Creed game, I think now their new approach is like, hey, why don't we just take a step back, build our core experiences, and then worry about other things like mobile apps later.
Yeah.
Or if at all, right? So, yeah. I mean, what are you going to do? It's fine.
What I heard about the removal of the Division's mobile app was that it was just creating an imbalance. Like, if one team had a guy with, like, a drone that had, like, a Vulcan cannon on it, and the other team didn't, it was creating, like, a huge, huge, one team was at a detriment.
Yeah,
so,
because you could, like, mark targets and get an extra gun on the battlefield and everything.
They said it worked really well, but it's just, you know, too unfair. But, yeah, like, we talked about the Division last time we recorded, and it, I think, is, you know, a game that we're really excited about, and it's looking better every time we see it. So
I think they did a really great job in demonstrating the game in the way that they did, where they showed how you can like turn on people and teams can turn on other teams and individuals can turn on groups of human players inside the game. I thought that was a really smart way to show off like what their vision of the game was as far as like the multiplayer, like the PvP zones go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it looks awesome. It looks great. So I'm curious, obviously, about the level of customization and how much depth there really is in terms of, you know, weapon types and customization and all those things that I get really into in games.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I guess we'll hear more about that later. And then the beta for that begins in December. I think I mistakenly sent you guys like 55 beta invites.
That's okay. Every time you do, I just click the link so that Ubisoft knows that we're clicking the links so that we can all get in, you know?
Yeah. For sure. So that's exciting.
It should be great. Yeah. I mean, just remember how much fun we had playing that one game, the 4-player co-op game, the
Fuse.
Yeah. Fuse. Yeah. And so I just think about that, like cover base, like that kind of stuff.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
So let's talk about quickly South Park, The Fractured Butthole.
Dude, I mean, this game was so much ridiculous amounts of fun that I'm all for another one. And this one is supposedly, it's going to be a superhero theme as opposed to D&D themed.
Yeah, which is something they do in the show. They played D&D and they also played superheroes.
Yeah. So, come on. It's great. Can't wait for those next gen graphics.
Oh, my God.
It's what's funny. Did you guys actually see this in the Ubisoft presentation?
No, I heard about it after. Like,
okay,
right
so
after.
Right at the beginning of the show, Aisha Tyler brings out Trey Parker and Matt Stone. And the first thing they say when they walk out on stage is they're wearing like the, you know, NSYNC microphones.
Yeah.
And they're like, these microphones are fucking stupid. That's like the first thing they say. And then they were like, yeah, well, the combat in our last game really sucked. Like, it fucking sucked. And so we're just going to make it better. And like, they were just very like themselves on stage. Yeah. And it was kind of like a weird vibe, but I think they're showing that they're aware of what they liked about their previous game and what they didn't like, and so they're gonna make a new one, and I'm sure it'll be just like the old one.
Yeah, that's fine. It's fun.
I'm okay with that.
I have no problem with playing a fun game that doesn't take 250 hours to play, and that, you know, like, they're nailing it in my area, like what I want. They're nailing my area.
They're nailing your area. Fractured butthole.
Fractured butthole.
Absolutely. And then also from Ubisoft press conference, they talked about a game called For Honor. Did you see this?
Yeah, I don't know anything about this.
Me either.
Okay, so this was also a very interesting game presentation because they brought out like a guy who looks like he would have designed this game. He looked like, you know, like a Vessin, or, you know, you guys don't watch Grimm, but just this like beastly looking guy, like huge beard. He walks on, he's like, yeah, here we go, you know? And they demonstrated a game called For Honor. And what it showed was different like warrior types from different eras. So like knights and then like shoguns or something. I don't know. And so they showed combat across these three different time periods, like different types of warriors. And then they go into this gameplay mode that looks like it's a competitive battle arena with like a battle taking place, like maybe like a castle is being under siege or whatever. And so your crew like runs out and starts fighting through the AI teammates or AI competition. And then they showed this sort of elaborate PvP combat scene, but it's melee combat, if that makes sense. So a lot of games these days are shooting games, you know? And so they showed what it would look like if there was competitive melee and you actually needed to do things like guard and block and go into different stances and stuff like that to fight against other players. So seems like a pretty cool concept. It reminded me a little bit of Rise, Son of Rome, if that were like a multiplayer game.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it seems interesting. There's a beta coming out soon. It looks like it's going to be a multi-platform game. So just something to keep an eye on. It looked interesting, new IP. So, you know, what the heck?
Awesome.
Yep.
Did you guys, either of you, watch the Bethesda thing? I ended up missing it entirely because I didn't realize it was early. But
no, I didn't get to see that either.
I think we were actually recording.
We were recording during it, weren't we?
Yeah. Yeah.
But they announced Dishonored 2.
I know. That's exciting, cool. Right?
That's like your bread and butter, right?
Yeah. Did you guys get to watch the trailer or anything like that?
I did see the trailer. It looks good.
Mm-hmm. It looks really good. And it looks like two different characters that you're going to be able to play as, possibly, I think is what they announced.
Yeah.
Nice.
A lot of female representation this year at E3, which was great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the same type of setting, and they showed all the different like mechanized steampunky kind of stuff. And I heard there's going to be a new focus on the stealth mechanic to make it a little more obvious as to when you're in stealth and doing things. And that game was so great. Like I'm all about a second one. So I was excited to hear that Bethesda hadn't forgotten about Dishonored, which is entirely possible when you're announcing Fallout 4. And what else did they announce? Doom, like six things, right? I feel like. Doom, it's like a billion games. So Dishonored 2 as well. And I think it was soon. Was it this year or early next year, maybe?
I think it might be early next year, just so they don't compete with Fallout.
Yeah. No sequel to Wet, though, with Eliza Dushku. I was really like, I really wanted a sequel to that. I mean, that game was actually really good for the time. But
I never played Wet.
Yeah, it was kind of cool.
It had an unfortunate title syndrome.
Yeah.
You guys want to play Wet tonight?
Yeah, I mean, it was no 50 Cent Blood on the Sand, but it was still pretty good.
At least it wasn't called Eliza Dushku Wet.
Right. At least it wasn't called that.
Don't Google that.
Wait, hold on.
Oh, God.
That was my typing fully. You guys want to talk about about the HoloLens?
Just briefly, I know they had the HoloLens set up. I know people were waiting upwards of 5 and 6 hours to get a chance to look at the HoloLens, which is kind of crazy because it's supposed to come out sometime next year for consumers, right?
Yeah.
I believe so. I mean, what they showed on stage was a camera view perspective of somebody playing Minecraft in augmented reality.
Right.
They were playing the game on a, you know, like a coffee table, and their Minecraft world rose up out of the coffee table, and they were to sort of look into the world and also interact with a player that was also in the world but playing on their own Xbox system. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that I will say about the HoloLens that I've heard from listening to other podcasts and stuff like that is that what you actually see currently in the HoloLens is really just, you know, like the size of a mail slot is where the AR is displayed. So it's not going to be your full field of vision.
So it's not full field of vision. It's not projecting onto that glass or something.
No, not at the current time. I think the field that the AR will be shown in is not like your entire vision. And I think that maybe was a trade-off that they made when they decided to make the headset unit completely self-contained.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I don't know. It's going to be a first generation product.
Yeah.
Like many first generation products, it shows promise, you know, but it's not necessarily the end of the game. And, you know, there aren't a lot of other AR products out there. So I think it's a cool opportunity for them to try something.
Well, still the idea of being able to have a three-dimensional image projected in front of you and to be able to walk around it and perhaps manipulate it is pretty staggering.
Absolutely. Like
what they were showing off at E3 was something for Halo, where they actually did a mission briefing, which I guess was voiced by Jennifer Hale. So they would would give you a mission briefing about going and playing, you know, Halo Guardians. They'd tell you, like, here's your enemy types, and you'd be able to, like, stand around this war table with all the other, you know, I'm using finger quotes here, but all the other Spartans, and they'd tell you about, like, what the mission objectives are, you know, sort of like you see in so many of these science fiction games. But these people that actually got to see the demo were experiencing it in real time, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So
just imagine if they re-released yet another version of Star Wars where you're actually standing there with Admiral Akbar explaining, you know, the mission briefing to you, right?
Well, even the, what's the game called, Sabacc, where Chewbacca plays on the Millennium Falcon, and there's like the little 3D guys fighting each other.
Yeah.
They could totally fucking make that finally and have it like look like that in real life.
Oh, that would be so much fun. That's a great idea.
There you go.
Not to be the Debbie Downer of the group, but I really feel like it's something that like our kids will get to enjoy at like an extreme level.
Mm.
But for us, it's going like Oculus and HoloLens. They're great technologies for future thinking, but I just still feel like it's like this is going to be like a clunky. It's not going to be what you guys are describing right now.
Yeah.
It's a first generation.
You're going to put it on, you're going to be like, oh, and then like things won't move the way they're supposed to when you're like trying to touch and interact with them. And like, it's just going to be awkward and clunky for a while because they can't have worked it out yet. So
Right. You know, what would make this, this would skyrocket sales and interest in this is if someone like Vivid Entertainment got a hold of a HoloLens.
I mean, that's what made the internet successful, right?
I'm unfamiliar with who we're talking about.
Don't Google it. Name it. Don't Google.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Well, that was E3, guys.
Yeah. Cool.
At least from our perspective.
Scott, I think we have to beam you out of here.
Yep. I need to attend to some other duties. if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So thanks for letting me hang, and I will catch you guys next week, and I hope the rest of the show goes well.
Thanks,
we'll
man.
We'll try to clear your desk for next week.
Don't give my desk away while I'm gone this time, all right?
We'll try.
All right.
We'll
do. All right, see you, man.
All right. We're back, and we're going to talk about Batman early impressions. I haven't gotten a chance to play all that much, but it's...
How far... well, it's okay. Let's not ruin anything here. How do we decipher how far you are without ruining anything?
Hmm.
Has anything changed yet for you?
Yes.
Okay. So we are both probably... I think probably 6 to 7 hours into the game. I'm not like... crazy far in, but I've played a decent amount.
I think we're about, you might be a little bit ahead of me because I've just been playing before work for about an hour or so, and I played about an hour this morning.
Okay.
So I'm like maybe 5-6 hours in, and it's awesome. Like it's kind of crazy. You start off with pretty much all of your abilities, so there's not a lot of unlocking to do. So they're just like, yeah, you're fucking Batman.
Which I really loved. They wasted no time giving you anything. I also loved that, like, the biggest announcement, you know, when this was coming up was like, you're going to get to be in the Batmobile. It's going to be awesome. And in my head, I was like, oh, I'll probably be like halfway through the game. I'll get the Batmobile. And it is literally like a minute into the game. They're like, Batmobile. And it's got this like ridiculous entry scene to where it like comes ramping over the another building and lands in front of you. I was like, oh, wow. They're like, here you go. The game's only going up from here. So.
Oh yeah, it's crazy. The game is so like, I don't know if I've ever seen a game that kind of melds cinematics into gameplay like so seamlessly.
Yeah.
Like it's crazy. Like even like you enter a building and like the camera will like whip around and it's absolutely gorgeous.
It is it's pretty clear to me now why they gave somebody else other than Rocksteady the last Batman game, and it's because they just wanted Rocksteady to make this game. They were like, just, you know, we're going to put a Batman out because we want to put one out, but you guys just work on this title for the next, you know, 3 years or whatever, 4 years to get this thing put together. It is utterly gorgeous. Like,
yeah, it really is.
Smooth and seamless. The fighting, they introduced, so part of the mechanics, they introduced a new fighting mechanic called Fear Fighting, and their Fear Takedowns, is that what they're called?
Yeah.
And basically it allows you to, if you're stealthed and up above a group or behind, coming up from behind a group, it allows you to target one guy and do a fear takedown on him and then move your reticle essentially to another guy, take down that guy, and then move it again and take down a third guy, like in one smooth fell swoop. They all get taken out quickly. And they introduce it pretty early, like a couple hours into gameplay. It's like one of the first things you really unlock. And it makes you feel that they have just figured out a way to make you feel like Batman and badass without any problems. You know what I mean? Like, there's rarely a hiccup, rarely a stutter, just kind of like constantly you can brawl if you need to, which was something that I think they changed from the first one, because they used to kind of not want you to brawl. The whole point was to kind of in and out of combat. You know, you'd swoop in, you'd fight, you'd swoop back out, and then you'd come back in once they forgot where you were somehow, and then take them out and really kind of be that stealthy version of Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And this one really is kind of like the big, you know, like you said, you wanted the skin from Dark Knight Returns.
Yes,
but you kind of are that big hulking Dark Knight Returns Batman that can just jump into a fight and take down five guys and then jump out.
For sure. Yeah, the combat is still my favorite, I think, of any of these games, any of these action titles. I love it a lot. And you can actually use the Batmobile. If the Batmobile is parked like down the street,
mm-hmm.
you can chain the Batmobile to have like a Batmobile assisted takedown of your enemies. So you can be comboing with guys and hit like a special button combination, and a turret will pop up out of the Batmobile and fire onto your enemies and, like, you know, fire knockout rounds, which is crazy.
He doesn't kill anybody.
No. Even when I notice when you're driving the Batmobile and you hit a guy, you don't smush them and kill them. You electrify them. And they
go
flying.
Yeah, you electrify them. Yeah. I really love that they made the point. So once you get the Batmobile, one of the first things that happens is you get attacked by these drone tanks. And they make a very audible point. It almost felt like in a movie when there's like ADR, when there's like somebody in the background that all of a sudden yells something to explain something to the audience. Like, they make a huge point of like, wait, these are unmanned tanks? And Alfred's like, yeah, they are. And he's like, okay. And then just starts blowing the shit out of every tank in the area.
Yeah,
like three missile launchers come up and you just start pounding tanks around you.
Right.
And I was like, oh, they made a very fine point of saying, like, you can kill these tanks because no one's inside of them. But so the Batmobile kind of has – we're all over the place, but whatever. The game is great.
Yeah.
So Batmobile kind of has two modes. There's your normal driving mode where you can, like, tail other cars and go after them. And, you know, you've got the Afterburner. It's kind of a mix of Tim Burton's Batmobile and Christopher Nolan's Batmobile.
Mm-hmm.
It's got that sort of big hulking tank feel, but it still sort of looks like the long – Batmobile car from Tim Burton. That's the way I felt.
No, I agree. I totally agree. I think, like, I also heard that they're going to be releasing in the future as DLC packs different Batmobiles, which made me super, because all I want is the fucking animated series Batmobile.
Oh, the animated one? Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Kind of that one, too. Yeah, it's somewhere in that realm of Batmobile. But it has two modes. So you'll be driving and you can hit, I think, the left bumper or the left trigger, one of the two,
mm-hmm.
and you'll go into what's called combat mode, and it kind of like all of a sudden the car shifts, becomes a little smaller, and turrets pop out of it, and you have 360 degree movement then, so the car is much slower, but you have much better control over where you're like moving, and that makes combat in the car like so much easier, because I was trying to think about, I was like, while I was driving, I was like, am I having to tail every car that I want to like take down and then hit the B button? Like, this is gonna get boring real quick. And then they're like, nope, this is what's going to happen in the car. And like, the car shifts around and changes. You get, you know, two missile turrets, and you get some special abilities that get added to the car. And then eventually you get a grappling hook from the car,
which is awesome,
which is amazing. And
you pull down walls,
you can electrify things. Like, there's all this stuff you can do with that. And
you can
climb
up buildings with the car.
With the car. It's absolutely ridiculous. And yeah. Lucius is in it, and he's Lucius Fox, right? He's like, yes, I put the repelling hook on the car. I don't think it'll hold the car's weight. And then, you know, Batman's like, well, we'll see. He's like, yeah. I knew you'd want to do that. So I think, you know, if you had any question about whether Rocksteady was going to be able to pull off the mechanics yet again, I think those have been answered swiftly. The game is buttery smooth all the way through it.
Oh, for sure.
Plot, let's talk,
I'm loving the plot right now.
Yeah,
we can't really get into it.
A little bit about the story, just real quick.
Yeah.
So basically, you're starting the Batman Arkham City happens.
Mm-hmm.
You clean up the city essentially and kind of close.
We can tell about the end of that game now. I mean, because it's been a couple years ago. So
at the end of that game, the only thing I couldn't remember from this one was how does Joker dies at the end of the second one? Correct?
Yeah, he gets takes a bunch of serum, becomes like a giant, big hulking monster, and then you end up killing him.
Right. Okay. So you end up killing Joker and kind of stopping crime and sealing off the jailed part of the city and get all the criminals back in jail, right? So the city goes through a period of peace, essentially, is what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
No one knows who's going to pop out and start trying to control things, but no one had for a couple years, which is how the game opens. Joker's gone, you know, Penguin's still around, and Mr. Freeze is around, but some of them have been put in jail, and they're kind of like, everybody's laying low. And Batman's still around, but he's not doing anything at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then essentially the kickoff to the story is that the Scarecrow threatens the city with basically citywide bomb gas attack that's going to take out everybody and start making them kill each other. And he demonstrates it inside of a diner with a police officer and some people in the diner. And they all just start going mad and literally just brutally killing each other. And when they do that, they evacuate the city, which I think is humorous how they find new ways to evacuate the city of people.
Yep.
Every time you're going to play a Batman game, they're like, it's Christmas. Everybody's inside. Or like, it's like a weird.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're right.
Reason for why there's nobody in the city. But they evacuate the city of all the pedestrians, or all the civilians, rather. And basically, crime starts to take over again. So while you're moving around, you're hearing all the criminals talking about how it's great that, you know, Scarecrow kicked off this big crime wave. And then it quickly turns around that he has a partner in crime, and that is the Arkham Knight, who you don't know who he is. He's just this guy kind of dressed like a mechanical Batman almost.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? And he is leading sort of an army alongside a Scarecrow to take down the city and take down and kill you ultimately.
Yeah. And it's crazy because there's, you know, tanks rolling around the city and guys with, like, you know, better guns and better armor. And then there's still all the, you know, the thugs, like Penguin's thugs and Riddler's thugs. They're out in the city, too. So there's a lot to contend with as Batman.
Yeah. And then from there, you still have Barbara Gordon. She's around as Oracle. And you have Commissioner Gordon. He's around kind of helping the story along. And the cops are sort of there, but they've kind of been evacuated for the most part. But what's neat is that because this has happened before and because you're no longer kind of the could-be villain, you partner with the police. You actually get the police base as one of your bases. Like, you get to go in, and that's where you'll put criminals, and stuff happens inside of the police base where you can kind of, like, pick new missions and see what's going on with the story and kind of catch up if you get lost. And then Oracle also is helping you, and Lucius Fox and Alfred are all kind of coming in on your video screen to help you as well,
which is all like crazy and seamless too. Like, you'll be driving in the Batmobile and the camera will just like whip around and you'll be looking at a screen in front of you, and you know, Alfred will be there talking, and it's a great way to deliver that exposition without really, like, you know, slowing down any of the gameplay or the story. So it's
like
it's
pulling
really cool.
You out.
Yeah.
And then the usual tropes of the Riddler's, you know, riddles are around the city. Have you started those yet?
I think I have like one, but
did you
now
do the car one? Because it is extremely hard.
I don't think I have yet. And the thing about the Riddler one is I actually want to complete them now because the stakes are a little bit higher. So
yeah. Did you hear about the story? Did you hear that? Is that why you want
to? Yeah. I'm like, oh man, now I got to do it.
So basically, and we can say this too, Rocksteady came out and just said the quote unquote true ending of the game, like the actual, like the ending that they want everybody to reach, is only reachable if you 100% everything else. So So you have to do all of that. And what's interesting is that they lowered the number of riddles. So there was like 400 and something in Arkham City, and I think there's like 200 and something in this one. And then they're, but they are harder and they're more puzzle-like than the last ones. So the last ones usually involved you just kind of like going into detective mode, figuring out where the power line was going or something like that, and just kind of unlocking it all.
Yeah.
These are more interactive puzzles with either you or with you in the car. There's still all the other storylines from all the other characters, and you're going to kind of bounce in and out of the buildings. And the map you start out on, from what I understand, is only like, I think, a quarter of the actual game.
Oh boy.
I think it expands from there. So the game is huge, but in a good way. I think it's completable. I don't know. I'm in it so far.
Yeah, it's tons of fun, and maybe in a couple of weeks we'll be able to talk about the story more, because it's right now it's incredible. There's some really unique stuff going on that I haven't really seen in games before. So
yeah,
it's pretty awesome.
And that's the thing, is like the story from where it progresses is so sort of shocking and awesome when it happens. I don't want to even.
Oh yeah.
It's anything. Oh, no. So we're going to leave it at that. What I described as the story is the first 10 minutes of the game. And it's a really great kickoff. So, you know, it only goes up from there, and it's awesome. If you've got an Xbox One or a PS4, like, I can't imagine you wouldn't pick this
right.
game at this point.
Right.
I don't even know that you need to have played the others, to be dead honest. I think
no,
you can pick this up and play it straight.
It pulls so much from all the different Batman universes. So, for instance, like one of the things that I got giddy about was when you visit Oracle, Barbara Gordon, in her apartment, you get to see some of the posters she has hanging up. And one of them is for this old character that inspired Bruce Wayne as a kid from the animated series called The Gray Ghost.
Yeah, Ghost.
Yeah, she has a Gray Ghost poster hanging, and I was like, man, that was one of my favorite episodes of Batman the Animated Series.
Yeah.
Because I love that Gray Ghost character.
And there's a throwback to the old TV show there, too. Which
is there really? That's
well,
great.
Well, the way that you go into Oracle's like base is that you go to that bust of...
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Is it Shakespeare? I don't know who it's supposed to be.
I think it is. Yeah, I think it's Shakespeare.
But that's from the TV show. That's how they got into the Batcave, was a bust of Shakespeare.
That's right. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's lots of stuff like that. And there's big plot points pulled from the comics as well. So it's cool. It's great. I mean, I can't wait to just swing around more and explore, you know?
Yeah, I think all the stuff from not Batman Begins, but the non-Rocksteady one, the kind of questions about the story and that stuff was a little like herky-jerky. Definitely felt, I think you remember why we loved Arkham City so much after playing Rocksteady, even the first few hours of this Rocksteady game. Rocksteady's just really nailed it on this title. They're very good at making Batman games, so I'm glad they're doing it.
Yeah, and this is their last one, so.
Yeah.
At least for many years.
Yeah.
But it's awesome. See. I'm excited. Excited.
All right. Well, we'll talk more about it, I'm sure. And
yeah.
I think maybe next week you're going to do some wrap-up thoughts on Witcher 3. We were going to try and sneak them in, but this one went a little long.
Yeah.
So we'll come back with the question of the week, or weeks at this point.
Yeah.
What excited you the most at E3?
We are back with our question of the week, and we asked you guys right after E3 was over, what excited you the most at E3 2015? And we got awesome responses for you guys, and a lot of surprise, a lot of Mass Effect. But so Haggis McHaggis, who's at Haggis McHaggis on Twitter, says Johnny Cash. So he was talking, of course, about Mass Effect Andromeda.
Yep. Great opening to that trailer.
Yeah.
Fiora Bianca at Fiora Bianca says backward compatibility, No Man's Sky, and of course Mass Effect Andromeda.
I'm still excited for No Man's Sky, even though I don't know if I'll play it until
I read a couple. I shared a couple articles with you guys, but I read a couple articles of the play, and I was like, "Oh, it's what we thought it might be." Lying around and doing stuff.
Yep. Colin D, who's at Colin Drimmy on Twitter, says Dishonored 2, Fallout 4. And everything I wanted out of E3 this year. It's true. It was a pleaser this year. It
really was.
Yeah.
Mary McAllister at House of Griffins, Fallout 4, and Mass Effect Andromeda.
Yep. Those are big ones.
Two games that will take up like 3 weeks total non-sleeping of your life, I feel like.
Oh,
right?
For
if you
sure.
add up all the hours, or maybe month. Maybe a month.
Yeah, for real. Ninja Stripes, who's at Iron Gear Arts on Twitter, says Mass Effect Andromeda.
I'm catching a theme.
I know.
Laddie at Laddie1313 says Doom and Uncharted 4, but mostly Doom.
Yeah. A lot of people were really stoked about Doom. They had a really big presence there that we didn't really talk about much, but yeah. They've been working on this new Doom game for ages, and it's looking really good. So if you were a fan of Doom growing up, it looks like you might finally get the Doom 4 you've been waiting for. So
true.
Hawk Silverthorn at Delta on Twitter says Fallout 4.
Oh, boy. Drifting at Sarah Sector says Final Fantasy 7, Fallout, Mirror's Edge. They're all TR is
true.
Deus Ex and SWTOR plans. There's SWTOR plans?
Yeah, there's more SWTOR stuff coming up. Yeah.
I don't know what TR is. I couldn't guess what TR is. I'm sorry, Sarah Sector.
We should know, but it's early.
Tyrannosaurus Rexes.
There we go. J Pro Reed, who's at Respawn Point, says Uncharted 4 and the Final Fantasy VII remake were his highlights, and he went over insane over a bunch of announcements, though.
Awesome. That Road Guy says Final Fantasy VII remake and Fallout is also great.
And Drifting at Sarah Sector says the only
thing
announced.
Again.
Oh yeah, he's back. He says the only thing announced was Mass Effect.
Justin at RevN7 says Sony's fan fiction conference and Horizon were impressive new IP.
It was sort of like an alternate universe where Sony was just like, you know what? We will give you all that stuff that you've been begging for a long time. Why not? Gary Startuska says, who's at GameGuy82 on Twitter, says everything from Microsoft and Nintendo along with Bethesda's and Destiny's new content. So he's across the board, likes everything.
And finally, Michael Alexander at Majestic as Duck. All right. I get it. I'm absolutely pumped about the new Mass Effect, but what I'm most excited about is Fallout 4. Man, Fallout 4 did get a lot of love. Mass Effect, you know, smaller announcement, but Fallout 4.
Oh, yeah. And they're like, hey, and it's coming out in like two months.
Here you go. Enjoy. That thing you didn't know was coming is coming now.
It's incredible.
Yeah, so I thought it was a great E3. I'm so happy you got to go. I know it was like a long time thing for you. Sorry you were stuck in a box, but I know you got to run around for some of it.
It was still really cool. It was a great experience, you know, and the game performed pretty well out there. So
That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm happy.
It looks good. I know we don't, like, it's weird for us to talk about your game on the podcast.
Yeah.
It gets a little, like,
crossing the streams.
yeah. But Scott and I really are very excited for it, and we're pretty happy that you get to be working on it. So
thanks, man. Yeah, it's
stoked.
I can't wait to play it with you guys. It's gonna be awesome. I play on my lunch breaks all the time now because I like it so much. So
you can't wait till you get to kill us in DM mode, is what you're saying?
Yeah, I'll drop goblins on your face and stuff. It'll be fun. But thank you guys for listening to episode 207 of the Rated NA podcast. Matt and I are gonna be at San Diego Comic-Con in like a week and a half. So we'll have one episode before then, and then we'll do probably a couple Comic-Con episodes. I'm assuming this time we'll record a bunch of shit this time.
Yeah, for sure.
And you guys can find us on Twitter, and that's at Nerd Appropriate. You can follow us on Facebook, and that's /Nerd Appropriate. We'll be using the Nerd Appropriate Instagram account down at San Diego Comic-Con, so make sure you follow Nerd Appropriate on Instagram as well. Yeah.
There'll actually be like an army of Instagrammers for that, because I think Christina will do it too.
And all sorts of fun stuff. And definitely. So thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll be back next week with new stuff.
Yeah. And on a quick note, I know we said it a little bit at the beginning, but as you've heard from sticking around with the podcast, things have been absolutely nuts for the three of us for the past couple of months. But we think we're getting it back on track now, so we should be more regular on Wednesdays and back in the normal time where you guys expect us. So we're happy to be here. We're sorry it was a little weird for a few weeks, but hey, you know,
shit happens
sometimes. So thank you guys for sticking around. We really appreciate it. See you next week.
All right. See you guys.
Sweet. Yeah. We didn't do it out of order. Don't we always go rundown after the...
No, I think we do that and then the loot crate and then it's not important.
I think we switched it since you've stopped editing it,
Oh, I see how it is. I was like, Scott's gone for a couple of weeks.
We're not even
called
the Rated NA podcast anymore.
Oh, yeah?
It's just Rated Matt and Ash approved.
Wow, yeah. That's quite a bummer. I'm really upset about that.
I actually was going to call it Ball Juices, but...
Right. Oh.
I overruled him. We took a vote, and I have 2/3 sway, so yeah. I won the vote.
Well, it sounds like I made it back just in time then.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
This week on Ball Juices.
Okay.